This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
Goose is barking again, and she's...
stressing you out over there.
I knew the clap was going to do it. I knew the clap was going to do it, and I was, like, waiting for it. But, okay, she's back to her bone now. I am drained, y'all. Did a lot of social things yesterday, and now I am, like, more drained than I think I've ever been.
The social battery is, in fact, dead.
Yeah, but it's, like, because that went so dead, it just took away from all of the other batteries, too. Mm. So now I'm just, like, trying to play catch-up. Thank God I don't have Gabe today. Thank God.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'd be a nightmare parent today. It would just be a nightmare.
Oh, well, I'm glad you got to rest. I was honestly surprised when you texted us and told us that you woke up, because I had already been out canvassing for, like, 2 hours. Yes. And I was like, damn, okay, Katie, you never sleep this late.
Never. I never sleep in. It's just not who I am. I am a morning person. Even when I don't fucking want to be, I am just, like, up at 5 a.m. And
I was going to say, I can always count on you being up. If I wake up randomly at 6:30 in the morning, I know I can text you because you're already awake.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm so excited when people wake up, but today, nope. And it's unheard of.
I like truly, listen, this is one of the things that I love about the differences between us in our friendship. I love that I am so very much a night owl. I cannot fall asleep most of the time if it's before like 1 or 2 a.m. Sometimes Whew. Even later. I've got insomnia problems. But I also like to sleep late. I will get up early if I need to, but I appreciate that you are an early riser and you go to bed earlier. I think that difference is a nice little balance between
us. It is a nice balance, because then when we're together, I definitely stay up later than normal, which is always fun. And then I feel like I sleep in a little bit later, but even sleeping in a little bit later for me is definitely waking up earlier for you.
Yes! But then I feel like we get to maximize our time together.
Exactly. If
I'm being forced to wake up earlier to like hang out with you, and I don't mind it. I'm like,
no, oh, it makes nice. It makes me feel a little bit more normal. Mm. Our more balanced schedule when we're hanging out, I feel a little more normal. Definitely.
Some insight into our friendship.
I wonder, listeners, what are you? Early bird or night owl?
Also, are you a napper? I freaking love a nap.
Oh,
but I feel like I never have time for them.
Oh, no. See, yeah. I feel like I almost wake up early to have time to nap. I fucking love a nap. I've got like a nap time, basically, where it's like around 12:30, 1 o'clock, it is time to nap before I pick up Game Plus.
When I first went off to college, I did a lot of hardcore napping, and I'm trying to remember back to then, and I'm like, was it because I genuinely was trying to schedule a nap every day, or was I depressed?
I mean, it could be that. Or it could both. Also just be both. I mean, college time is exhausting.
Truly.
I think back onto the schedule that I had in college. God, my poor knees, first of all. The amount of just walking and moving and dancing and zero stretching.
Oh, yeah.
That I did.
Zero
stretching. I just had a crazy tall bed. For some reason, I always put my bed, like, on top of shit. I don't know. No wonder my knees and back hurt so much now. But yeah, no, college was exhausting. No wonder we needed to nap.
My college was at the top of a very steep hill on Staten Island. And while we were at the top of this steep hill, part of the school was on the hill. And my dorm building was at like the lowest point. That sucked.
Oh, that sucks.
It sucked getting everywhere.
Well, and when you're 19, you spend so much energy just being such an idiot. Like, no wonder I was so tired. I was just, like, so fucking stupid and spent so much energy on that. Just doing this stupidest shit.
Truer words have never been spoken.
Someone once, like, spilled a bunch of blue laundry detergent, like, outside the dorm. So me and my best friend Allie made a little grave for Papa Smurf. With, like, a little hat on it.
That, you know what? I can absolutely see you and Allie doing that.
We made a giant box for it one time, and we would just, like, hang out in it and smoke and watch movies. And then when the box for it was destroyed, we then turned it into, like, a giant hamster wheel.
Oh, my God.
And that just did, like, hamster wheel races. Like, just did the stupidest shit. And, like, people then knew us throughout college as, like, oh yeah, those girls in the fort.
The fort girls. Yeah. Oh my God, Katie.
Yeah. Most of my energy was doing shit like that, so.
Definitely would have loved to have gone to the same school for college. It would have been fantastic.
We had a lot of fun. Breakdancing snowmen were built, ice bowling. I mean, we had a lot of fun.
Ice bowling.
Oh yeah, we built up a snow little wall. Aww. And then from Allie's bathroom, when it was really cold because we were in Chicago, we were pouring water on in the wall so that it would be ice. And then it froze overnight, and then we put water bottles that also froze filled with water at the end, and then we would ice bowl.
Oh my God. What floor was Allie's bathroom on?
The first floor, the first floor.
Oh, okay.
We did that on purpose because mine was a nicer bathroom, but it was further, so we did Allie's on the first floor. Yeah.
I absolutely love that so much.
Couldn't tell you much about my actual education. But yeah. Ice bowling.
Nice. Let's do it this winter.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know why I haven't done it since. It was so much fun.
Sorry, Bob.
Oh, yeah, no, I bet he'll love it, actually.
I think he will.
I'll put it somewhere where no one will walk on it. Well, okay, we'll have to take pictures of that. I'm so smart. Excited for fucking winter, y'all. I can't. I'm done with the summer.
It was like 50 degrees last night when I took Chalupa out, and that was the best thing ever. Amazing. I'm so tired of being hot and sweaty.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of it. I'm ready for long sleeve shirts. I'm ready for hats. My beanies are just looking at me like longingly.
Those beanies belong on your head.
I know. It's time. It's
you
time.
You were like the Louise Belcher of our high school. Never, no matter what the season was, saw you without your hat on.
I always wear that. I always wore my hat. Always. I can't wait. I can't wait. I don't know how to segue
into our topic today. I don't know.
One time in high school, Allie, our other best friend, and I went to the beach and we saw aliens.
Oh.
And people think that what we're talking about today is related to aliens. Is that segue enough?
That works, but also sometime I'm gonna need you to tell me that story because I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually saving that story, the full story, for when I can get Allie on the podcast to talk about aliens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goose.
You were doing so good. I guess I should explain. People think that I'm going to be talking about sex work today because I said the
list. Oh, no. And aliens, sex work and aliens.
Yeah, no. So that was for next week. We both had a week and we needed to put together a topic really quickly. I tried to get the notes on the history of sex work and stuff together, but that's it's big there, and there's a lot to talk about, and that's, I didn't want to do half-assed. And for a little while I was like, well, what if I just do like part one of the episode? And I was like, no, fuck it. So today we're gonna be talking about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
Also apparently also known as the Devil's Triangle, which I didn't know that.
I also did not know that.
So what is your experience
with the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah, like, do you have, I don't want, or like, knowledge of, like, what do you know of it as someone who like grew up on the East Coast?
Okay. Of course I know like all of the, you know, movie and TV stereotypes and everything.
Of course.
Don't people think that like Amelia Earhart think that she was like flying over it or something?
Yeah, she does get brought into the Bermuda Triangle, even though I don't think she was anywhere near.
Weird and yeah. Weird and wacky things happen. Lots of boats have gone missing. Mm-hmm. Planes have gone missing. Strange happenings. I feel like there was a Scooby-Doo episode about the Bermuda Triangle or something.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's more just like references to it in movies, TV shows. I do like watching, you know, documentaries about stuff like that.
Which I watched a few of today.
I put air quotes around that, guys. I don't know. I mean, I find it fascinating that shit just disappears and we don't know where the fuck it went. And like, why is it happening? Is it some kind of like weird magnetism in that area? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
It seems spooky.
It definitely seems spooky. My introduction to it as like a West Coast kid, I thought that it was the place where all of the storms started. And okay. I thought we just like knew that. So anytime people were like this plane or ship got lost in the Bermuda Triangle, I was like, why would it go there? Like, we all know that that's where all of the storms start.
Well, I feel like that there's that connotation with it is like stormy weathers and people just boats disappear in the storms.
Yeah. I didn't realize that it was that people thought it was spooky for a while. I didn't realize those aspects to it existed. I thought it was all storms.
Before we continue, I just need to tell everybody that I am absolutely coming down with whatever cold my husband has right now, so I'm sorry if my voice sounds painful to listen to.
I was going to say, you started that like so sickly, like, I just need to say.
I'm like so congested right in this very moment right now because I cough like really hard. I slept on the couch for days to try to avoid this, but we live in a tiny apartment, so
yay. Sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you just can't avoid it.
Okay, so let's continue.
So yeah, the Bermuda Triangle. I want to believe in the Bermuda Triangle. is how I'm presenting this.
Listen, I want it to be spooky. I want that shit to be real. Do I ever want to go through it? No, I fucking don't.
No, 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 no.
Do I love the idea of it? Yes. I do.
Yes. And I want it to be a thing. But unfortunately, my heart just doesn't believe it. Truly unfortunately.
Your heart's not in it.
My heart's not in it. So the Bermuda Triangle covers a vague area of 500,000 to 1 million square miles.
Wait. Because every time I've seen like a picture of it on the map, isn't it they literally have it outlined as a triangle? Like,
yes.
I thought that we had a definitive line where we knew it started and stopped.
Well, so really hardcore believers say, you know, that the definitive area is starting at Bermuda, 1,000 miles southwest is Florida. And then they say around 1,000 miles over is Puerto Rico, and then back up to Bermuda, roughly 1,000 miles back up. So not even equal distances. Wow. They'll say it's a perfect isosceles triangle. It's not a perfect isosceles triangle. but like that is, it does make, it is like roughly 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. So that is mostly what people refer to as the Bermuda Triangle. But sometimes things happen kind of around it.
Okay.
And people don't always adhere to those strict, that strict area.
Strict guidelines.
Quote unquote, strict guidelines of the Bermuda Triangle. So airplanes, boats, and people have all disappeared there. People wonder if it's like a locational thing or, you know, what is it about this that we're so aware of? Not once did anyone mention that it's a triangle between three major ports where we have a lot of eyes on ships.
Oh.
So like when a ship sinks, there's three forms of places to be kind of tracking this area, but like shit still just disappears in the ocean. Well, I'm sorry, I want it to be real so badly. It's also located next to the jet stream current. And other extreme weather and ocean conditions that can interact with the electromagnetic field of the Earth, which makes magnetic anomalies possible.
Ooh, see? See? I'm onto something.
Oh, yeah. The term Bermuda Triangle was coined in 1964 by Vincent Gadeed in Argosy magazine, and it was used to describe an area where there seems to be an uncommon amount of plane and ships disappearing.
Okay.
So Time magazine quotes that between 1946 and 1991, there were over 100 disappearances of ships and planes.
Wow.
Which is what I said at first. I think Chubby is pointing out the same thing. At first, I was like, wow, that's a lot. But then I really thought about it. From 1946 to 1991, that's like 50-ish years. And so that's one ship, if we take it just super averaged, that's one ship and one airplane a year disappeared in that area.
Which seems like so high of numbers.
But does it? I mean, the time period of 1946 and 1991, when we didn't have GPS, we didn't have all this technology, one ship and one airplane a year, I feel like...
Okay.
I feel like more would be happening.
And I'm just like, is it just that we don't look for it in the news right now? But I feel like I don't really hear about boats and airplanes, you know, like going down in the ocean that much anymore.
Yeah. And when they do, like in 2014, there was that Malaysian Airlines that went down in the
that
Indian
was
Ocean.
All over the news.
And that like definitely inspired Manifest.
Oh, 100%.
Because 100%. They then like later found like a tail fin or something, which is like exactly 100%.
Spoiler alert.
But sorry guys. It seems like a large number, but then when I like really thought about it, I was like, okay, actually that doesn't seem like that big of a number.
Yeah,
considering how many ships, and that's ships and airplanes. That includes like people's passenger ships.
Yeah.
So, allegedly, the first recorded account of the Bermuda Triangle was from douchebag Christopher Columbus.
Yes.
On his journey to America. He didn't discover it. So, he writes about odd occurrences, mysterious lights, compasses malfunctioning, said that the ocean was worse than it had been the entire trip. And that there was a giant fireball in the sky that splashed into the sea.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I take what Christopher Columbus says with a grain of salt.
I'm like, what were you smoking, sir?
What are you smoking? Also, like, are you just trying to make yourself sound better?
Yeah. I mean, I believe the stormy water part, but... What was the fiery ball that went into the ocean?
Was that just a shooting star?
Oh, maybe.
Like, you know, Columbus. I wish we had a better source than Columbus. So we will get into the mysterious lights, but compasses malfunctioning is like a reoccurring thing in the Bermuda Triangle area, which is, which I think is related to what you were talking about with the magnetic stuff. March 4th, that's Molly's birthday, 1918, the USS Cyclops, the Navy's largest fuel ship at the time, disappeared north above Barbados.
Ooh.
Yeah. The weird part is that no distress calls were sent, and no one answered any of the radio calls from the hundreds of ships in the area that were radioing to them. So it's almost as if something happened to the passengers,
mm-hmm.
and then something happened to the boat because of that. But like, how does a giant ass fuel ship just disappear? Because if that exploded, the hundreds of ships in the area would have seen it, right?
I would think so.
So this is where I'm like, ooh, okay, that's kind of spooky.
That is kind of spooky. Because
it's a large fuel ship. So that definitely...
It's a ghost ship.
It's a ghost ship. That movie.
I don't think I ever watched it.
Oh my God.
I don't do scary movies that often. Yeah. I like mysteries. I don't really like scary things.
I mean, to be fair, it's really only the opening scene that you need to see. The rest of the movie sucks. But the opening scene fucked me up.
Okay.
I still think about it. The rest of the movie is meh. No distress calls were sent. Oh, and that's almost a reoccurring thing too, where people just seem to be like kind of chill before stuff happens.
Yeah.
So another example of that is December 28th. 1948, a Douglas airship carrying 26 people vanished 50 miles from its destination in Florida. To put that into perspective, it radioed in about 20 minutes away from the airport, being like, hey, we're 20 minutes away, and then just disappeared.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So these are the kind of occurrences that I understand why people are like, well, that's fucking weird.
That is weird. They just vanished.
Because it just vanished. And they even were like, no sign of stress when radioing in, just being like, yep, we're 20 minutes in, and then they were just gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, what kind of vortex is in there?
Well, like, what kind of vortex? I mean, are the aliens just like, zoop, zapping these people out? Like... What's going on here?
They're like, they can't detect us because of the weird electromagnetic field in this area.
Mm. Oh my God. Or have you seen Nope yet?
No, not yet. Nope. Okay. I'm super excited to see it though.
Okay, I'm gonna come to town ASAP. I want to go see it again, and I'll go see it with you because it's so fucking good. Okay, then I'm not gonna talk about it. We'll talk about this and that after you see it. Okay. So, listeners, if you have seen Nope, message me. Southern District. Oh, the Southern District in 1951 was a U.S. Navy landing ship. So it's like one of those ships that like fucking airplanes and shit land on. It's a big ass ship. And it also disappeared.
What?
Yeah.
Those just don't disappear.
Mm-hmm. It just disappeared, and there were no, ooh, this one is really spooky. There were no, like, Navy people, like, all of these people, like, went out and search for all of these things afterwards, like, and nothing was found until 4 years later. No. A piece of the ship was discovered on the Florida coast. Do you want to guess what piece it was? Think of the spookiest thing it could be.
Oh, I don't know, but I'm fear tearing. What is it?
It was just a single life preserver.
No!
Ship's name. Yeah, that's fucking, that's
ooh,
creepy.
That, I have chills.
That one I was like,
okay,
imagine.
Okay.
So, I mean.
Oh my God, I'm like actually crying right now.
That one really, really got me. And the thing that I think was really jarring to me, that it was 4 years later.
Yeah.
That's it took crazy. 4 years for and the like, life what, preserver to get there.
What condition was it in? Does it say?
There's a photo of it. The photo will be on our Instagram, but it looked fine. It didn't look burned. It didn't look like it had holes. It just
or that it was like super weathered.
No, it didn't. I mean, it was a black and white photo from, you know, the 1950s. Oh, yeah. So it wasn't a ton of detail. And unfortunately, we can't, like, enhance, you know, like they can on CSI.
Yeah.
Enhance. But it didn't look to me like what I would expect wreckage that had been in the ocean for 4 years to look like.
Yeah. That's why I was wondering. So we're going to have to post that picture.
Definitely. December. So I also want to point out a lot of this is in December. A lot of these things are disappearing in December.
Ooh. Okay.
Which, yeah, isn't that interesting? So like the weather in that area in December, that's definitely something to keep in mind. So December 1967, a 23-foot cabin cruiser, which was a ship that is built to be unsinkable, but not like Titanic unsinkable. What I mean was it had a special part in the boat so that even if a hole came in and it filled with water, it was built in such a way that the wreckage of the boat would still stay afloat.
Okay.
And two experienced sailors disappeared with it. Right before that happened, dude, my light just fucking flickered.
Oh, I saw.
I'm alone. Bob is out of town for the night. Mike doesn't get home for another hour. What the fuck? It has never done that. Okay. Two sailors disappeared with it. So, holy shit. Dan Barak called the Coast Guard and requested a tow from them, saying that the witchcraft had... It's also called the witchcraft.
That's hilarious.
It had hit something and needed a tow. By all reports, he was just, like, totally chill, like, hey, you know, we just need you guys to come and get us. We're unable to keep going. They had flares. They had all of this stuff. When the Coast Guard arrived minutes later, everything was gone. Like, no ship, no wreckage, no people floating anywhere. They just disappeared. Everything disappeared.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What? And like to this day, no pieces of this boat, which is built in such a way to stay afloat even if crashed, nothing was found.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right? So I like, these are the weird things where I'm like, man, yeah, these are super fucking weird. I get it. I get why people are very skeptical.
Yeah.
So again, December 4th, 1970, again, December, Bruce Garon was flying his small airplane 100 miles off the coast of Miami, which is in the Triangle. He claims at one point to be surrounded by a storm that had only one exit. This next thing is a word-for-word quote from the guy because he does live through this experience.
Okay.
There was only one exit I could find, and I call it a tunnel vortex because these small puffs of clouds formed around the walls of a tunnel and it was rotating slowly counterclockwise. And it was probably 700 feet wide when I entered it. I didn't want to do it because I've always been taught not to fly into horizontal tunnels between storms, but it seemed so dire that I had no other choice. When I entered the tunnel vortex, my instrument said I was 100 miles east of Miami. I was in the tunnel for 3 minutes and 20 seconds, and when I reached the other end, I ended up over Miami Beach. I realized at that point something unexplainable happened. He would have had to have been traveling 1,800 miles per hour to have traveled 100 miles in 3 minutes and 20 seconds, which is something that his little plane was not even close to capable of.
What?
Yeah, so this man claims that he flew through what he's referring to as a vortex, tunnel vortex, and traveled so fast in it that he went 100 miles in 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
I'm assuming, but he didn't feel like he was going that fast?
He didn't super say. I mean, I imagine not.
Yeah. He probably felt like he was flying at a normal speed.
But also, like, when you're flying through such a thing, like, you're so heightened and freaked out, you know? Like, would you even be able to tell the difference? Like, was that something I don't know if I'd even be paying attention to that. I think I'd have my eyes closed and I'd be crying. Like, you just flew into fucking storm that's 700 feet wide. You know, like, wouldn't you just be crying at that
point? Oh my god.
So this is like the most famous case that has credibility for a lot of people, including myself, like skeptics. So in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in 1945, Flight 19, which was a collection of Navy torpedo bombers, took off for a routine training mission over the Atlantic.
Okay.
5 bomber planes, totaling in 14 people, on their last flight required for cadets before graduation. They were being led by, like, the instructor. But, like, how... Of course, it's the last flight.
Of course it is.
Like, what fucking Lifetime sick, like, movie is this? About to graduate. I do want to point out that limited and primitive technology give us little data. We don't have GPS and stuff like that. Yeah. But these planes were nicknamed the Iron Birds because they are built to withstand war.
Yeah.
They don't just crash and they don't just explode. So as they're going off, they radio for help. And this is what they said. We can't fly west. Everything is wrong. We can't be sure of any direction. Everything looks strange, even the ocean.
What?
Every single airplane... Are you hearing that?
Hearing what?
There's like a high-pitched... The fuck is happening?
Are your headphones doing something?
There was just like this high-pitched noise.
Didn't that happen one time with my microphone or okay. something?
Yep, I plugged it in. Okay. I just, like, touched the plug and it went away. What was the last thing I was saying? Oh, every single, all airplanes experienced a malfunction in their, like, gauges.
Wow.
And the chances of that happening are astronomically slim. Like, so small. 20 minutes later, the final call for help came out when Charles Taylor, a lieutenant of the Navy, said...
Shoopy!
Yo, he just scared the shit out of me.
Bro, did you literally see my soul leave my body?
Yes. Wait, how is this the spookiest episode we've done?
Okay.
So 20 minutes after that first call, the final call for help went out from Charles Taylor, a lieutenant from the Navy who was leading the graduates. And he said, okay. We can't make out anything. We think we may be about 225 miles northeast from base. It looks like we're entering white water. We are completely lost.
Whoa.
10 minutes later. A PBM Mariner flying boat took off on a rescue mission and would radio the tower one time before also disappearing.
What?
Yeah. The final report from the Navy is we're not even able to make a good guess as to what happened. That's their conclusion on the reports.
It's realistic as hell.
Yeah. So as for some of the theories that we have, it's just, you know, the Katie Kidd belief of it's just naturally a dangerous place for sailing because storms start there. Storms and atmospheric conditions make it really dangerous. The deepest trenches in it, like, it has crazy deep areas that would make it impossible for us to find wreckage.
Yeah.
And scientists say that their research shows that there's no evidence that wrecks happen more there versus any other area in the ocean.
Okay, so then why is it that we talk about it so much, like it does happen more?
I think because, tied into theory two, magnetic phenomenon that impacts compass readings make it super strange.
Yeah.
Because then we get reports of people, you know, just disappearing in a way that seems like they just went off the radar, but it could just be the magnetic area is fucking with it, so it just seems spookier.
Okay, yeah.
That's my personal belief.
Like, there's you're also just more likely to actually just get lost there, and then people can't find you because you're going in the wrong direction. And
yeah, yeah, and it just happens, and because of the atmospheric conditions, it messes with the technology we do have, which then humans add, you know, meaning and feelings to that.
That's true.
Because of the lightning storms and conditions in the area, there is something known as ball lightning, which is a rare phenomenon which could account for the balls of light seen by Christopher Columbus, and other people in the area have reported seeing these balls of light in the sky. So it could have been ball lightning, which, even knowing what it is, I would still just, like, be insane to see IRL.
That would be crazy.
My personal, and then we get into the supernatural theories of aliens or Atlantis or black holes.
Atlantis!
So there's always a few people who are like, Atlantis was a victim to the triangle, it fell into the sea, and now resides and thrives under the water in the Bermuda Triangle, and that they are taking down ships and boats who have noticed their existence.
Oh.
Love that. There's people who have referred to, this is my favorite, the Bermuda Triangle as the underwater Area 51.
Oh, okay.
That's it. That's all I have for that one. That's
no explanation.
No explanation. People are just like, weird shit happens there. Area 51, underwater.
Underwater edition.
Explains itself. So Larry Koosh, rhymes with douche, hilarious, author of The Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved, published in 1995, argued that many claims of writers are exaggerated, dubious, and unverifiable. He states that the numbers... He states that the numbers of ships and aircrafts reported missing in the area are not significantly greater, proportionally speaking, than any part of the ocean. In an area frequented by tropical cyclones, the number of disappearances that did occur were for the most part either unlikely or just, like, not mysterious. They're just like, oh yeah, like that, okay. Writers often fail to mention such storms or even misrepresent the represent the disappearance as having happened in calm conditions when the meteorological records clearly contradict this. Numbers themselves have been exaggerated by sloppy research. A boat's disappearance, for example, would be reported, but its eventual, if belated, return to port may not have been. So those are for things like way back in the day, before, like, pre, you know, 1930s. So, and then nothing that I talked about includes this, but some disappearance had in fact never happened. So there's one plane crash that's said to have taken place in 1937 off of Daytona Beach in Florida in front of hundreds of witnesses, but, like, there's nothing in the local papers. So his belief is that the Bermuda Triangle is a manufactured mystery perpetuated by writers who either purposely or unknowingly made use of misconceptions, faulty reasoning, and sensationalism. And the last fact that I have is in 2013, the Worldwide Fund for Nature identified the world's 10 most dangerous waters for shipping, and the Bermuda Triangle was not among them.
Oh.
Which really bummed me out.
Also, like, that other guy really just, like, rained on the parade.
He did, but really all
bummed
of,
me out.
All of those things being said don't apply to the specific stories and things that I mentioned, specifically Flight 19, which is naval records.
Yeah.
Of course, the guy who said he flew through it, humans. Who knows? Well, and like, who knows what kind of drug his brain released, you know, like what kind of chemical his brain released in the moment of that, where he's like, we're just gonna make all of this make sense so that you don't have a heart attack. But there are still super weird disappearances that happen, and that is not something that Koosh Douche can take away from any of us. Because I really want to believe in the Bermuda Triangle, and I'm going to keep believing in it until it's real. Because it's going to be like my Santa Claus. Yep, so those are my notes. This episode actually turned out to be more lengthy than I thought. I thought it was going to be like 15 minutes. So...
Sweet. Katie was like, bring the dialogue.
Like, bring the tangents, please.
This was great.
Okay, sweet. So yeah, Bermuda Triangle.
I also want to believe.
So badly. It's just a cool idea. Like quicksand.
Because I really thought that that was going to be a problem when I was younger.
Oh, quicksand and piranhas. I was positive were a significant issue.
Yeah.
Like, why is no one doing anything about the quicksand and the piranhas? But it turns out it's not a problem.
Thanks, wild thornberries.
Was it wild thornberries?
There was definitely a quicksand episode in that, and a piranha one. But there were other
examples. I feel like there was, like, some roadrunner piranha and quicksand
probably
stuff. Yeah.
Anyways.
So, that's the Bermuda Triangle. If you have any experiences with it, or if you or any loved ones have disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, you may be entitled to compensation. So,
but not through us.
Not through us, just through someone. But let us know so that we can, I don't know, be here for you through that endeavor. Y'all, I'm so tired.
We're ending this now. Okay. Bye.
All right. Goodbye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.